Here on Stolen Lives, we discuss brutal and heartbreaking crimes against children. Themes may include child murder, torture, and sexual, domestic, and child abuse. I do try my best to remain respectful for the babies in these stories and leave out unnecessary details that honestly, none of us need to know to understand the frustration of why and how this ever happened. However, if you find any of these themes triggering, this podcast may not be for you. Listener discretion is advised. This week's episode is a listener suggestion. Thank you to Carly for bringing Zayden's story to my attention. Now, this week's episode is a little different to the usual stories I discuss on this podcast. Zayden had a mother, father, stepfather, extended family who loved and cared for him very much. This is not a story of neglect or abuse. The crime that cost Zayden his life is probably up there with every parent's worst nightmare. June 2012, suburban Victoria, Australia. 10-month-old Zayden is put to bed in his home by his mother, a place where he should have been safe. But an intruder on a drug-fueled haze is spooked by a crying baby, and he would bash Zayden more than 30 times with a homemade baton made of copper wire and electrical tape, leaving little Zayden's bloodied and broken body to be found by his mother the following morning, in a crime that would leave a permanent scar on the small town of Long Jetty. This is Zayden's story.
Police were called to the home after reports of a burglary, only to receive a second call saying a child had been taken to hospital. Detectives won't comment on how the boy died, but are treating the death as suspicious. The mother and father were the last people to see their son alive. They spent today assisting police.
That, in anyone's language, is a tragedy for not just the parents, but the community as a whole.
For neighbours, it's a shocking tragedy too close to home.
Tragic and upsetting.
The family had only lived in the house for a few months. It had recently been sold. This afternoon, the family's dog was collected by council workers. Two other homes nearby were burgled. Detectives won't confirm whether they were connected to the tragedy.
I just hope they can get whoever caused the incident in the first place.
And with more on this story, 10's Alicia Morrison joins us live now from Bendigo. And Alicia, do police know yet how the boy died?
Well, unfortunately, circumstances are still unclear. Police won't confirm how the child died. A post-mortem is expected to reveal the cause of death. Now, detectives are still here at the scene gathering evidence, where they're likely to remain into the evening. Now, it's quite a large area that's been blocked off by police tape, and that's on a main road out of town, so it's certainly hard to miss for the locals here. And the mood amongst neighbours is one of shock and disbelief. It will certainly take some time for the community here to move on. Helen.
Zayden Veal Whiting was born in September 2011 to parents Casey Veal and James Whiting in Bendigo, Victoria, Australia. A second child born to the young couple, Zayden having a loving older brother, 3-year-old Xavier. Unfortunately, two young children for these high school sweethearts, who were still only 20 years old themselves, it was just too much pressure and the couple would split soon after Zayden's birth. From all accounts, however, Casey and James co-parented well, and both were a significant part in both Xavier and Zayden's lives, with Casey having the majority custody of the two boys. June 2012. Casey was in a new relationship of around 6 months with Matthew Tizzle, and they had moved into their first home together with the two boys, 4-year-old Xavier and 10-month-old Zayden, on Eagle Hawk Road in Long Jetty, a suburb of Bendigo in country Victoria. June 14, 2012. There was some tension in the household. Casey and Matthew had a disagreement. The front and back doors of their new home weren't locking properly, and despite numerous complaints to the landlord, they still hadn't been fixed. But what this did, it allowed the family dog to escape and narrowly missed being hit by a car. But this caused tension within the couple. Matthew locked the dog in the laundry and went outside to smoke some cannabis alone. Casey first put Xavier to bed and then settled Zayden, giving him a bottle around midnight, before placing him in his cot with his favourite white teddy bear next to him. Her final words to her baby son would be, quote, "I love you, Mini-Me," unquote. Casey would later report to police that it took her a while to settle herself after that, going to bed around 2 to 3 a.m. By this stage, Matthew was already in bed and asleep. June 15th, 2012, 6 a.m. Xavier shook his mother awake, telling her, quote, doors open, unquote. Sleepily and under reflex, Casey checks the baby monitor, which isn't picking up anything from baby Zayden's room. And while this was unusual, there really wasn't anything of concern at that time. It would be later found the baby monitor was unplugged in the baby's room. In leaving her bedroom, Casey immediately went into panic. As I mentioned earlier, the doors didn't lock properly, but the family dog usually slept in the living area, and he acted as a guard dog of sorts. He was a big dog and intimidating and would easily frighten off a would-be intruder. But Matthew had locked him in the laundry the night before, so he wouldn't get out of the house again. Now, not only were the doors open, but the house had been ransacked. Belongings were thrown everywhere. It would later be discovered Matthew's wallet with $1,000 cash inside was missing, along with their car keys, car stereo, and other belongings. Maternal instinct took over, and remembering the baby monitor didn't pick up any movement or sound from Zayden's bedroom, Casey just wanted to know her baby was okay. She raced into Zayden's room and her world stopped. Zayden was completely covered with a blanket and his teddy tossed in the middle of the room. Casey reached out for her son, but it was evident he wasn't moving or breathing. She pulled back the blanket and screamed for Matthew, a scream that Matthew would later tell police was one like he had never heard before. When Matthew went into Zayden's room, he saw his partner holding the baby, who was limp and cold. He was bruised and bloodied. Matthew grabbed the baby and attempted CPR on the 10-month-old, while Casey called emergency services. Paramedics and police arrived on the scene within minutes, with Zayden being rushed to hospital. Now, unfortunately, he would not survive his injuries and would be pronounced dead at 8:05 a.m. It would later be determined Zayden had suffered from a heart attack and skull fractures, caused by being hit in the head as many as 30 times. This was a brutal and frenzied attack, but who would murder such a small and innocent baby and why? What was of interest to police was numerous reports of burglaries and attempted break-ins on the evening before. In total, 11 cars and homes were broken into that night, unusually high for the quiet, family-friendly neighbourhood. But where the robbery of Zayden's home was different, aspects of the crime scene did appear staged. Casey's purse was found near the door with her license pointing out. Outside of the car stereo, other belongings were removed from the couple's cars but left on the ground close by. Add on to that, this was the only robbery where there was a person who had been attacked. To police, it didn't appear like a natural robbery. So like any other missing or murdered child case, police always look close to home. Because in reality, if a child is missing or murdered, it is statistically overwhelming that it is a parent or guardian of the child that is responsible. Only hours after Zayden was pronounced dead, Casey and Matthew were taken in for questioning. They were separated, so as to not being able to share stories or to fabricate pieces of evidence. It was said that in particular, Matthew became inconsolable during questioning. Matthew adored Xavier and Zayden like they were his own, and this had affected him greatly. When Zayden's mother and her partner were being interviewed, major crime scene unit officers were at the family home, combing the scene for evidence. By the time of the arrest of the convicted murderer of Zayden, the major crime scene unit would clock up a total of 34 hours in forensic examinations, the unit's largest ever investigation. Of interest at the time were small bloodstains on Matthew's pillow, jeans and T-shirt, which were taken into forensic evidence. Now for the record, the blood would later be determined to be solely belonging to Matthew. However, while police tried to figure out what was happening, Xavier was removed from Casey's custody in what would have been another blow for the already grieving young family. Investigators formed a list of potential suspects. Besides Casey and Matthew, they also considered Zayden's biological father, James Whiting, two psychiatric patients who escaped from a facility that night, one being known to have an obsession with babies and teddy bears, leaving the toys outside of the home of families who had young children, as well as a 21-year-old man with a long list of criminal convictions who police wanted to talk to, but he had seemed to have gone missing. Twenty-one-year-old Harley Hicks was actually friends with Casey Veal and James Whiting during high school. Hicks had a rough childhood. His parents had a toxic and abusive relationship which ended in divorce. And then Hicks had been sexually abused several times when he was 11 years old. To cope with his childhood trauma, both he and his twin brother Ashley Hicks turned to alcohol and drugs. In particular, cannabis, heroin, ecstasy and methamphetamines. And to buy said drugs, the Hicks brothers committed crimes with convictions dating back to 2007, when the boys were only 14 years old. Harley Hicks had a large number of criminal convictions, including armed robbery, aggravated burglary, reckless conduct endangering life, and four convictions of burglary, all around the Bendigo area. One previous violent conviction that stood out to investigators was only a little more than a year earlier, April 2011. Hicks carried out an armed robbery where he brandished a large kitchen knife, threatening a gas station attendant. Now, for these convictions, he only ever received short sentences or probation, sentences designed to rehabilitate Hicks instead of punishing him for his addictions and childhood traumas. But whereas Ashley made an attempt to turn his life around, Harley Hicks didn't. He failed to attend treatment and assessment appointments, and his crimes were becoming increasingly violent. Police were obviously interested in speaking to Hicks, who lived in the area and had a long history of committing home burglaries. But when they went to his home at 2A Green Avenue in Long Jetty, he was nowhere to be found. His roommate stated he had packed a bag and left days earlier, just after the murder of little Zayden. Police later finding and arresting Hicks for a probation violation, lying on the floor of the back seat of his father's car in the neighbouring suburb of Gisborne. In his official police interview, Hicks professed his innocence repeatedly, that while he was involved in some of the burglaries that night, he had no knowledge of what happened to Zayden. Quote, "As I said to you in the car all the way here, I had nothing to do with that. Absolutely nothing." Unquote. Hicks's theory was the man actually responsible was a friend named Aidan Kirby, saying the pair had used meth, cannabis and drank alcohol together that night. That they robbed some of the houses and cars together, before Kirby started acting strangely and was very aggressive, so Hicks went home. But when questioned by homicide detectives, Aidan Kirby also denied involvement and he had proof, providing a rock-solid alibi of his whereabouts on the night in question. Hicks would later withdraw this statement, admitting to fabricating his friend's involvement. This was enough for police to be granted a warrant to search Hicks's home and electronic equipment. In a raid of his home in Long Jetty, police found all the items that were stolen from Casey and Matthew, as well as some of the reported missing items from other properties. But of particular interest was a baton crafted out of copper wire and electrical tape, a baton that was covered in blood, that when forensically tested was determined to be a DNA match to both Hicks and Zayden. Internet searches on one of the computers in the home showed someone searched for any news coverage relating to terms such as baby murder Bendigo and the specific address of baby Zayden's home. Because of this overwhelming physical and circumstantial evidence mounting against him, on June 20, 2012, Harley Hicks would be charged with 5 offences: murder, aggravated burglary, and 3 offences of theft. Hicks would plead not guilty to all charges. March 2014 was the start of the 5-week criminal trial at the Supreme Court of Bendigo. For the defence, Hicks' lawyer David Hallows argued it was not possible for Hicks to be able to commit all the burglaries alone, that some of the items stolen that night had never been recovered, suggesting someone else had to be involved. But the only defence the lawyers had in Hicks' innocence was the DNA evidence could also belong to his twin brother Ashley. And that's all they did have because Hicks had the murder weapon in his possession and had no solid alibi. But that Ashley Hicks could be just as viable as a suspect because of his drug addictions and previous criminal history, as well as being a complete DNA match to Harley Hicks. The prosecution argued that yes, while some articles from the other homes weren't found, everything stolen from the home in question, as well as the baton with Zayden's blood, was found with Hicks. The prosecution calling 3 witnesses to support Ashley was at his father's house on the night of the murder, completely debunking the defence's possible alternate version of events. That they believe Hicks broke into the home that night with the intention of robbing the family, before being startled after waking Zayden and hearing his cries, beating the baby to death with a makeshift murder weapon to silence him and therefore saving himself from being caught, before covering the baby's broken body with his blanket, unplugging the baby monitor, and fleeing with some of the family's belongings. Zayden's mother, Casey, took the stand to testify her heartbreaking discovery of her deceased son that morning, and how the loss of her baby boy affected all their lives. Quote, "I lost all my future plans I had dreamt for my boys. I lost his right to grow up, to celebrate even one birthday. All I have is memories, and even most of them are tainted by this crime and the trauma that has come from this. This crime has destroyed my life. I will never be the same again." Unquote. The jury deliberated for 5 whole days before reaching a verdict of guilty. In sentencing, Justice Stephen Kay called what Hicks did to baby Zayden the worst category of murder. Quote, "The life of a baby is particularly special and precious. He was in the safety of his own home. It's almost unthinkable a human being could carry out this crime. What you did is utterly evil." Unquote. Justice Kay announcing a record sentence in Victoria at the time for such a young offender. Life imprisonment with a minimum sentence of 32 years, meaning Hicks would be 51 years old when eligible for parole in 2044. Hicks's family crying when the sentence was read, Hicks standing with his head in his hands. Both Casey and James showed a united front in sharing their victim impact statements, holding each other and crying over the heartbreak for their little boy whose life was taken far too soon. Casey tearfully stating, quote, "I live in a jail in my own mind every day. My prison means I don't sleep, I don't eat, and I'm constantly sick because of stress. I have minimal answers, but at least I can put a name to what happened to us." Unquote. And James telling the media he welcomed a long sentence for his child's killer. Quote, "It's hard to put words to the emotions. We got justice, but this still happened. It doesn't bring Zayden back and it doesn't take away our pain." Unquote. And despite them being considered suspects and losing custody of Xavier for a time, he was returned to Casey when Hicks was arrested. But despite all of that, Casey, Matthew and James had nothing but admiration for the police investigation that resulted in the guilty verdict. June 2014. Hicks's legal team lodged an appeal arguing his sentence was excessive, especially given his young age and high risk status of becoming a target in prison. Again, his drug addictions and childhood trauma were also brought up as reasons where a lesser sentence more focused on rehabilitation was more suitable for Hicks than life in prison. That the lack of premeditation in harming the baby was reason alone that Hicks could be rehabilitated and was not a hardened violent offender. However, the High Court would not agree, and in February 2015, three Court of Appeal judges rejected the appeal claim, citing reasons for this the lack of remorse, compassion and empathy for others, that this demonstrated little prospect for rehabilitation. Zayden's mother, Casey, was present for the appeal trial and spoke to the waiting media outside of court, telling reporters Hicks' life sentence was nothing compared with her family's grief. Quote, "My son never got to be an adult. His other brother is going to grow up to be an adult and have his own problems adjusting. We think the decision was right. Now, as a family, we can try to become normal again." Unquote. Now, this doesn't mean Hicks and his family have given up on his potential early release. Hicks's mother, Wendy, regularly argues her son's innocence and instead points a finger at his twin brother, Ashley, or an unknown assailant. The last interview given was to the Daily Mail in 2020, so take this interview with a grain of salt. But Wendy says she is looking for a lawyer to work the case pro bono, and points to her father's deathbed confession that Hicks's twin brother Ashley was not at the house the night of Zayden's murder, and that the DNA also matches that of Ashley, but with Australian law the way it is currently, nothing less than a pardon would see Harley Hicks becoming a free man before his 51st birthday. And for that to occur, there would need to be significant new forensic evidence, and at least to date, this does not exist. At the time of this recording, Harley Hicks is held in protective custody in Bar 1 prison, alongside other child killers, like Arthur Freeman, who threw his 4-year-old daughter Darcy to her death off the Westgate Bridge in January 2009, and Robert Farquharson, who drowned his 3 sons, 10-year-old Jai, 7-year-old Tyler, and 2-year-old Bailey, on Father's Day in 2005. If you would be interested in me covering Darcy's story and the Farquharson brothers' stories, please let me know. They are both equally as horrific and heartbreaking as Zayden's story today. In her last interview with the media after the appeal was denied, Casey told ABC News Media that now 7-year-old Xavier could not move past his grief for his baby brother, that he struggled with the idea they could never go to school together, that every milestone he experienced was another memory he could not share with Zayden. Quote, "He lost his smile and lack of sparkle in his eyes changed that day. He will never be a normal kid. He is plagued by his loss and lack of understanding why, which pierces my soul. I cannot answer why or to make him feel better." Unquote. Heartbreakingly, Zayden would have been celebrating his 13th birthday this year, becoming a teenager. And to think of all his family have missed experiencing, all that he has missed sharing with his brother, unfair doesn't quite cut it, doesn't fully convey what I want to say. It's gut-wrenching for Zayden's family. September 2018, after 5 years of planning, the Victorian government gave funding to the tune of $1.3 million to erect a playground called Where Angels Play in Zayden's honour, opened on the shores of Lake Niger in Eagle Hawk, only metres from where Zayden lived with his mother in Long Jetty. A playground decorated with butterflies is a symbol of renewal. Zayden's father James said at the playground's dedication ceremony, quote, "We wanted it to be bright for Zayden and his personality. Xavier will love playing here, especially knowing it's for his brother." Unquote. If you have your own thoughts and theories on the case we discussed today, or any case we talk about on Stolen Lives, please search Stolen Lives on Facebook. Like the page so you don't miss an episode, and join the discussion group to talk about your thoughts and theories. You can also talk to us on Twitter, search lives underscore stolen, or on Instagram, Stolen Lives Podcast. If you like what you heard today, we would appreciate it if you share this episode on your social media of choice and subscribe and leave a positive review on your podcast app. Today's episode was researched and written by me, Ali. Hosting and production was also by me, Ali. Music is by Mayu.